Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty has the day off. Back in October, the Federal Communications Commission created rules which would have required internet service providers such as Comcast and Verizon to ask permission before collecting and selling a user's sensitive personal data, like social security numbers or browsing history, health information, and much more. Well, the Republican-led House and Senate have voted to roll back those rules, and President Trump has said he'll sign the legislation. Industry advocates are cheering, calling the rules regulatory overreach. We're going to take a close look this hour at what this means for consumer privacy online. We'll also talk about ways to protect personal data, and we'll discuss the impact this latest turn of events has on ISPs. Here this hour to help us parse the details, Matt Blaze is an associate professor for computer and information science at Penn. His research focuses on cryptography and secure systems design. Welcome, Matt.
I'm glad to be here.
And Brian Fung is technology reporter for The Washington Post. Hello, Brian.
Hi there.
And later this hour, we'll also hear from Julie Carney of the Consumer Technology Association. But first, let's get our comment line number out. A call or text works. The number is 267-405-2006. So we have, of course, Republican Congress and President now. So, Brian, first to you. Guessing this news wasn't unexpected.
Well, yeah, this was something that a lot of folks in Washington were kind of anticipating ever since the election. You know, folks who were at the FCC had, you know, particularly on the Republican side, had long been criticizing these privacy rules as a kind of overreach, you know, an executive overreach, something that, you know, applied onerous regulations on industry and so forth. And so as soon as the election occurred, you know, a lot of folks here in D.C. were sort of expecting some kind of, you know, at least a little bit of a rollback, if not a broader one.
So the rules created under the Obama administration last October and were set to go into effect later this year. So as of right now, what is the relationship specifically between broadband providers like Comcast, like AT&T, and consumers and their private information? What do providers see of our information, and what are they allowed to do with it?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, the rules would have gone into effect later this year, and now that Congress has acted, they won't. What that means is that, you know, internet providers like Comcast or Verizon will be free to collect, store, share, and even sell information like your web browsing history, your social security number, your financial information, your health information, information about your children, stuff like that, and you know, all of this is designed to help internet providers move into a world where advertising and online advertising becomes a much bigger part of their business.
And Matt Blaze, let's get you into the conversation here.
So I think what's important to remember is that what we're talking about is what we technically call metadata. That is, it's not the content of your communication, but it's who you're communicating with, when you're sending messages, in some cases your location, particularly when you've got a mobile device. And that information is increasingly very revealing about what we do and who we are. You know, traditionally we've thought of content of communication, what we actually say in our conversations, as being the really sensitive thing, and metadata is kind of less sensitive. Mm. But, you know, as we're using more electronic devices, as we're increasingly in the online world, that is increasingly less true, and it's almost backwards. In a lot of ways, the content of your communication is what you say, but your metadata really reveals what you do.
All right. So say I decide to research a particular diabetes drug. So what might an internet service provider do with that information, Matt?
Well, the internet service provider, first of all, is in a particularly privileged position to see what your communications is, because they have to process it, they have to deliver it. Basically, everything you do over the internet, they see, because that's what you're paying them to do. So, you know, they see everything. And if they're collecting metadata about what you're doing in order to target you for advertisers or for whatever business reason they might choose to do it under the rolled back rules. That means they learn what websites you're visiting. They may learn what search terms you're using. They learn when you're doing this. They learn from where you're doing it. And they learn the correlation between what you've done right now and what you do a minute from now and so on. Mm. So, you know, if you're researching symptoms of some disease, you know, and you're also contacting doctors who specialize in that disease a few minutes afterward, we can draw some pretty likely conclusions that you may be suffering from that disease.
So with that information, Brian, this translates into two things perhaps: advertising dollars, but also can that information come back to hurt me as a consumer if people know, say, you know, and I'm just throwing this out for insurance purposes, that I'm looking into a particular diabetes drug. And I know that insurance right now in this country is in flux, so we'll take that into consideration. But so two things there, in advertising dollars and what can this do to come back to haunt us. Brian?
Sure. So, you know, in order to talk a little bit about this, we have to understand how the internet providers' business models work. And, you know, until now, internet providers have mainly made their money by selling you access to the internet, right? So you pay Verizon a fee and you get a broadband connection that's, you know, say 10 megabits per second, and it'll let you get onto YouTube or Facebook or whatever. Now, with the introduction of data, it's a very different picture, because not only can internet providers make money selling you access to the internet, they're also looking to monetize this data by, like you said, you know, selling advertisements, but also potentially monetizing the data itself by selling that information to third parties like data brokers or credit agencies or, you know, as you said, insurers. And then, you know, increasingly in this world where, you know, you can get television over the internet or music over the internet, a lot of these internet providers are realizing that it's not just enough to collect data and sell advertisements or sell internet access. They also need to control content. And, you know, you've seen companies such as AT&T buying up, you know, trying to buy Time Warner, which controls HBO and Warner Brothers and all these other companies. You know, you've seen Verizon try to buy Yahoo, which has access to, you know, millions of eyeballs on the internet. And all of this content then allows internet providers to further sell advertising against that content and then use the data from that internet activity to further target and enhance the advertisements that it sells. So it's a kind of a circular cycle that allows internet providers to make more and more money.
So, Brian, is there a value that's been assessed to this personal information in say, billions of dollars to internet companies and advertisers? How much is at stake here?
Well, it's a hard number to kind of put your finger on. But, you know, a few years ago, AT&T launched a pilot program that it later discontinued. But, you know, under this new era, we may see something like it return. And this program essentially gave you a discount on your internet service if you agreed to let AT&T track your browsing history. So the discount, if you added it all up, amounted to about $350 a year. So, you know, you can use that as a bit of a baseline or, you know, a ballpark figure for estimating how much your privacy is worth to an internet provider, even though, you know, again, that program is a few years old now and has since been discontinued, but that gives you some idea.
So opponents to the FCC rules say the FCC created regulations that made for an unequal playing field, that broadband providers would have been at a competitive disadvantage with internet companies like Netflix or Google. Is that true, Brian?
Well, you know, it's a little bit complicated, because once you start talking about whether or not these rules are applied equally to different industries, you start to get into a bit of a legal discussion about, you know, who has jurisdiction, you know, which agencies has jurisdiction over what. I guess it would be easier to start by talking about, you know, what each industry can do under these new regimes. And you know, yes, it is true that Google and Facebook already collect a lot of this type of data and use it for advertising. And the question is whether or not internet providers should you know, have the same privileges when it comes to your data. And as Matt already said, you know, internet providers can see a whole lot about your behavior. But really, the internet providers are governed under a very different set of expectations because they're regulated by the Federal Communications Commission, whereas the internet companies such as Google and Facebook, those expectations are enforced by the Federal Trade Commission.
So it's complex.
And, it is a little bit complex, and we can get into a little bit more about how it is that they're different. But essentially, you know, the whole argument about whether or not they should be equal or treated equally has to do with the difference in jurisdictions between those two agencies.
Right, and there's also a practical difference, which is that at least in principle, if you don't like Netflix's privacy rules, you can choose not to use them. If you don't like Google, you can use a different search provider or a different email provider. But there's really no escape from your ISP. If you want to be on the internet, you need an ISP, and in general, there are only a few to choose from. And so, ultimately, this is the one thing everybody has to have. It's the baseline, and there's no escape from it. And at the same time, they are in the most powerful position to observe your behavior throughout the day.
So,
if I could also add
briefly,
The other piece of this is that, you know, when you're giving your data to companies like Google and Facebook, that's essentially an economic trade there. You're getting those services for free in exchange for your data, whereas with an internet provider, not only is the provider taking your money to provide you the service that you've, you know, contracted with the company to receive, but then they're also getting the data on top of that. So it's the internet providers are in some ways making money twice off of you, if not three times or four times.
All right. So let's get to broadband companies, who a little bit more. No surprise, quite happy with the votes in Congress. They say they're going to honor their own voluntary privacy policies. In general, what do these voluntary policies look like, and are they strong in protecting consumer interests, Matt?
So, different companies will have different policies, and those policies can be expected to evolve over time. In general, what the ISPs are promising to do is to allow people to opt out of collection. Now, the difference between opting out and opting in is, in practice, no one opts out or opts in. So whatever the default is what happens to the vast majority of people. The process for opting out may be fairly opaque. It's probably buried in the fine print of the service agreement that you never read. And it may involve some steps that you give up on before you actually follow through. And those policies can change.
Yeah. And I want to get Brian's thoughts in just a moment. We're up against a break here in Radio Times. Congress voted to eliminate the Federal Communication Commission's privacy protection rules from last year. We're going to break down what this means for consumer privacy online this hour of Radio Times. Again, our comment line is 267-405-2006. More just ahead. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Harry Cummings Jordan. Marty's off today. We're talking about the move by Congress just over the last week or so to eliminate FCC privacy protection rules and what this means to consumers. In studio with us is Matt Blaze, Associate Professor for Computer and Information Science at Penn. Also Brian Fung, Technology Reporter for The Washington Post. And going into the break, we were talking about the fact that Internet service providers say they're going to honor voluntary privacy policies. Brian, to you for a moment here, do all of these companies tend to offer these policies? And I'd also like to talk a little bit about the importance of reading through the information that's sent along to consumers about policies, which can be, you know, dense, quite dense at times. Brian?
Sure. So, when we talk about privacy policies, there are kind of two different ways we can look at this. One is the individual policies pertaining to any particular internet provider, and then there's also a separate set of voluntary privacy principles that many in the industry have voluntarily agreed to. Companies like AT&T, Charter, Verizon, T-Mobile, and Comcast have all signed on to these principles that were sort of written by the industry. And largely, the principles tend to track vaguely, roughly, with the FCC's broadband privacy rules, in that they provide for provisions such as a commitment to transparency, commitment to protecting the sanctity or the security of consumers' data within a particular provider's network, or providing accurate and up to date and timely notifications if and when a data breach has occurred against one of these providers. But it's also important to point out that these, again, are voluntary principles that could change at any time.
Yeah.
And the protections that are rolled out or named in these principles, again, track with the FTC, the FTC's guidance as opposed to the FCC's guidance. And in general, you can think about it as the FCC having defined a much more stringent definition of privacy and the FTC having defined a much narrower, much weaker, you could say, definition of what privacy is.
Just for a moment before we get to our next guest, talk about, we've discussed this before on Radio Times, but the importance that we take the time to wade through some of these policies. Matt?
Yeah, so every internet company has, pages of fine print that talk about these policies that, no one reads. There's too much to read.
And do you need an attorney with you?
Well, sometimes you might, what's important to look for particularly are the opt-out provisions and how to exercise them and how to, what data do they promise to protect if you don't opt out versus if you do. And you might be very alarmed to discover that quite a bit can be sold and otherwise used that you think no one is looking at.
All right. So I'd like to bring Julie Carney into the mix for a few moments here on Radio Times. Julie is Vice President of Regulatory Affairs for the Consumer Technology Association, which is a technology trade organization. Welcome to Radio Times, Julie.
Hi, it's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Julie, there's a quote from Gary Shapiro, who's president of the CTA. He says, the Obama-era regulation that we've been speaking of this hour threatens to undermine innovation and competition in the internet ecosystem. So let's get into that, if you will, Julie. How would rules which would have required broadband providers to get permission from consumers regarding personal user data, how might those rules undermine innovation?
Well, from CTA's perspective, the internet has flourished with a non-regulatory, sort of a non-onerous regulatory oversight. And if you have two different regimes for privacy, one that applies to ISPs, one that applies to edge providers, consumers are going, there's a gap. And we believe that ISPs, if they have more regulation, there's less incentive for them to invest, and I think ultimately consumers lose. Our view is that companies take privacy very seriously. The relationships are built on trust. They cannot violate consumer trust. If you look at the FTC and the FCC regime, companies were fine with the FTC regime. All we wanted from the FCC was a mirror image of what the FTC had done, and the view is that the FCC went a little bit too far. So if we've got more onerous regulations on the backbone of our internet, it's going to be harder for them to make the investment in the infrastructure.
So, Julie, of course, we're talking about pretty sensitive data here, like social security numbers and health information. In your opinion, are the voluntary privacy policies on the part of most, if not all, broadband providers strong enough protection for consumers?
Yes, I do think so. Under the FTC framework, which is they work on a case-by-case basis, they don't have what we call ex-ante regulation. The industry knows that data about children, finances, health information, social security numbers, even precise geolocation information, those are sensitive. That is a default. That is, we understand that those are the rules of the road. We make sure that that data is always protected and that consumers have an ability to opt out. So nothing has changed. Nothing has been taken away from consumers. What we'll do is we'll maintain our status quo until the FTC and the FCC can get together, as they have agreed to put together a framework that will be cross-agency. And FTC Acting Chairman Maureen Olhausen and FCC Chairman Ajit Pai have agreed that that is something that they want to do.
So, O'Brien Fung, I was just going to bring you back into the conversation. Any indication that this possible partnership is on the horizon?
Well, that's a good question. I think it may be a little bit too soon to say. All we have to go on at the moment is positive expressions of interest by the heads of either agency. It remains to be seen, how and whether a type of agreement could be hashed out. Essentially, the big issue right now, and Julie alluded to it, is that the FTC doesn't have the authority to issue regulations that try to preempt or prevent anti-consumer harms, whereas the FCC does. And right now, as a result of the congressional legislation, the FCC no longer has the power to enforce any type of privacy norms or rules on the industry. And as a result of a certain rule that governs the FTC, it's not allowed to regulate companies like Verizon or AT&T. That jurisdiction has been handed over to the FCC. So you kind of have this gap right now where the FTC can't bring lawsuits against companies like Verizon if it is alleged to have violated even the FTC's privacy principles, because that's strictly in the FCC's wheelhouse.
Yeah,
it's also just worth remembering that just because of the way technology works and the way we're using the internet and the speed, the amount of collection in 2017, what's revealed over your internet connection, is pretty sensitive and pretty revealing of you. But that is only going to increase over time. So the stakes for this discussion are only going to go up. The amount of data that can be collected, the amount of time that it can be stored, for the granularity with which it reveals individual behavior is only going to increase. So, it's important not to just think about what you're doing in 2017, but imagine, the difference between, how you used the internet 10 years ago and today. Well, 10 years from now, it's going to be even that much more revealing and pervasive. Right. So the stakes are high.
Julie, while we have you here, I just want to briefly get into net neutrality. We'll take a little side road and further deregulation on the horizon. I'm just going to ask Brian very quickly, since he's our technology reporter, just a quick review of exactly what net neutrality is.
Sure. So net neutrality is essentially an idea about fairness on the internet. And it's, essentially it holds that no internet provider should be allowed to block or slow down certain websites in relation to others just because it may have a financial relationship with one, or there may be an ideological or a content preference for one. And ultimately, these rules were passed by the FCC, the previous FCC under a Democratic administration, to try and ensure that consumers could access all content equally. And it's been highly criticized by Republicans who argue that this, you know, these rules are, again, onerous and, you know, reduce choice and are anti-industry. And so right now with the repeal of the broadband privacy rules, everyone in Washington is now talking about what this means for net neutrality.
So, Julie, what is the CTA's position on Obama-era FCC rules regarding net neutrality?
Well, we had, as you could probably guess with our 2,200-plus membership, a nuanced position on the net neutrality rules. But again, it goes back to, do we want to live in an environment with these ex-ante sort of what-if regulations when we have an ecosystem that we believe is working, that consumers are given a vast array of choice in their broadband providers? If you don't like one, you can switch to another. That there are business arrangements. Net neutrality is a lot about business arrangements between ISPs and the edge providers and how they are able to deliver services to consumers. So again, we don't believe that the government has a role in how companies work their business arrangements with their ISPs. So again, we believe in an internet that is open and available to consumers and businesses alike, but having the government regulate how agreements are made is probably not an appropriate role for them.
Julie Carney, thank you so much for joining us for Radio Times.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Julie is Vice President of Regulatory Affairs of the with the Consumer Technology Association, which is a technology trade organization. So we have, you know, to no one's surprise, a ton of calls and comments to get to. Let's see if we can get to our first comment from the comment line.
Hi, this is Rivka calling from Mount Airy, and I would like to understand, one of your speakers said at the beginning of the show that this move would allow ISPs to share your social security number, and another speaker said that this was only metadata. So I'm not clear how metadata reveals a social security number, and I'd like clarification on that. Thank you.
And thank you for calling us here at Radio Times. And she's, again, referring to the privacy protection rules that Congress has voted to eliminate, the FCC rules. So, Matt, why don't you, again, if you could clarify a little bit.
Yeah, so I should have said, if I said only, I misspoke. I should have said mostly. It includes metadata about your actual internet activity, but it also includes what's called your subscriber information. That's your the business information that you give your ISP, for example, when you sign up for service, your name, your address, sometimes your social security number and banking information and so on.
All right, we've got a text from a listener. What about law enforcement? If the authorities who have passed this law use it for investigations, wouldn't they be skirting the Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, papers, and effects? Trust on the part of business? What about Wells Fargo? Where was the trust then? Brian, you want to tackle that?
Yeah, so that's a really great question, and it's something that I've been trying to get to the bottom of in some of my interviews lately. Essentially, what people seem to be telling me, experts on privacy and security, is that, as a result of these this congressional action, there's really no limit necessarily on an internet provider, giving this information to a government official in exchange for money. I mean, in fact, we've actually seen a case, I think back in 2013, the New York Times reported that the CIA had actually paid AT&T to obtain the call records of some of its customers. So this is not an unheard of case, but the idea that a government agency or even a foreign government could obtain information about a group of consumers or a particular consumer, there's nothing currently on the books preventing an internet provider from complying with that request. Particularly, other privacy experts have said the existing sort of state of affairs still allows law enforcement officials to go to an internet provider and issue a subpoena or a warrant and get information that way as well. So all in all, this doesn't really do a whole lot to change the power of government officials to obtain information about people based on their internet information. It may expand it a little bit, but to the extent that government officials already have access to our information, this doesn't really do a whole lot to augment that.
Matt?
Well, that may be true from first of all, it's a great question, and I appreciate the person who asked it, because this opens a really important part of this. And I want to disagree a little bit with what was stated. Although it doesn't create any new legal authorities for the government, strictly speaking, what they can get with a subpoena, they can get if it's a business record of an internet service provider. But as soon as internet service providers are able to monetize for advertising purposes or for whatever other purposes they want to collect your data, they're going to start collecting far more of it than previously done. And whether they're selling it or not, and how it's packaged to advertisers, is a separate question from the infrastructure that's put in place to collect and store that data internally in the first place. As soon as that data is collected and stored, and we can expect this congressional action to result in a long-term increase in that over time, that becomes accessible to the government with a subpoena, or which is a very low legal standard, or sometimes without. And in fact, if it's repackaged and sold and available either through a data broker or directly just for purchase, sometimes even the subpoena requirement goes away.
So, Matt, I'm detecting some urgency in your voice here. What should a consumer who's listening to this show right now do? And we'll talk about practical suggestions after the break. But is it a call your congressperson type of situation?
Unfortunately, Congress just acted.
Yeah.
But
you can still call your congressperson if you are, whether you're pleased or displeased to voice your opinion.
And you absolutely should. And I think, those members of Congress who voted in a way that's different from what you might have liked should have your displeasure known to them, absolutely. I hear that we've got the music going,
Well, we'll get back to more of this after the break here on WHYY's Radio Times, WHYY in Philadelphia. Again, Congress just voted to eliminate the FCC's privacy protection rules regarding internet service providers. We're talking about that this hour on Radio Times, and there's more straight ahead. This is Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. In studio with us this hour, Matt Blaze, Associate Professor for Computer and Information Science at the University of Pennsylvania. And Brian Fung is reporting for us out of the studios of the Washington Post. And again, our comment line number is 267-405-2006. Let's get to another one of our listeners who's left a comment on our comment line.
My name is Jeffrey. I'm calling from Philadelphia. My comment is, it's just a simple question of who does this stand to benefit, corporations or people? I think the answer is obvious, that this is going to benefit corporations and that it's going to hurt my privacy. I mean, who knows what the implications of this thing are? It could really spiral out of control. Thank you.
And we appreciate the call to Radio Times, Jeffrey. So Brian, in your reporting, is there anything anywhere that you've discovered that this might actually have some benefit to consumers?
Well, I think, you can look at this in a couple of ways. Remember when I was talking a little bit earlier about AT&T's pilot program where they offered consumers a discount on their internet service if they allowed the company to track their data? Some proponents of this sort of expanded ability of internet providers to, look at your data have pitched that type of program as a potential benefit. Conceivably, you could argue that being able to access the internet for a lower price could be good for consumers. Other people might argue, this is just another way for your internet provider to charge you for something that you should be getting anyway, which is your privacy. Another industry argument has been that internet providers that sell targeted ads or, you know, offer targeted ads are doing the consumer service. Targeted ads are more relevant to consumers in some cases, and rather than seeing an advertisement for something that you're not interested in, perhaps a targeted advertisement would get you to, you know, successfully buy something. So in that respect, perhaps these policies could benefit consumers in that way. But, you know, again, these are issues that you can certainly take differing sides on. It's really sort of the, you know, two sides of the same coin.
Right. And Matt, we've got a question from Rob who says, once you collect data like this, it can be a target for hackers.
That's right. Hackers and also foreign governments.
Yeah.
So, you know, once the collection of this data and the sale of this data becomes, you know, increasingly available and increasingly pervasive, you know, we can talk about how advertisers might use that. We can talk about how insurance companies might use that. Those are at least relatively regulated, relatively above board things. When we start talking about how rival nation states might use this, or how criminals who get access to this data, or stalkers who get access to information about where you are or who you're communicating with, and so on, the side effects of this start to become increasingly scary, and I think legitimately scary.
All right, so let's get to keeping private information private. We have an email from Bob who asks, what are your thoughts on VPNs, and if they're in favor of them, are there any VPN providers they would recommend? Brian, define VPN.
Well, a VPN is short for something called a virtual private network, and essentially you can think of it as a type of technology that helps shield your online activities from prying eyes by making it look like you're browsing the internet from somewhere else, or that you are someone else. And, you know, Matt can probably speak a lot more in detail about how they work and any particular products he may recommend, but that's generally how they operate.
I think the follow-up question regarding VPNs, Matt, is, you know, how do you find a VPN company which honors its customers' privacy by not logging its customers' activities?
Right. Well, so the first thing to understand is that what a VPN essentially does is let you do something called tunneling your internet traffic to another place on the internet. And basically, when you use a VPN, all of the traffic that you send out on your ISP to visit different websites or visit different places on the internet is encrypted and packaged up and sent to the VPN endpoint, the VPN provider, where it is decrypted and sent out on the internet.
So this is not easily accessible then to the internet service
Well,
provider.
It's not easily accessible to your internet provider, but there's a fundamental limitation of a VPN, which is that all you're really doing is shifting what's going on from your local provider to whoever the ISP of the VPN provider is. So now you don't just have to worry about the internet service provider's privacy policy. You have to worry about the privacy policy of the VPN provider and of their internet service provider.
Doesn't sound like this is an option that you're
Well, you know, I don't want to sound too negative about this, because, you know, one thing is that your VPN provider is a company that you have a relationship with, and privacy is part of their product. So they're likely to have a much stronger privacy policy. And the information coming out of the VPN provider may or may not, depending on a lot of things, be easily correlated with you as an individual. Unfortunately, we can't really make as categorical a statement as we might like about how well it can be correlated with you, because things you do on the internet often identify you.
Mm.
And, you know, it may be that that internet service provider sees quite a bit about you. Now, there are other technologies like Tor, which are similar to VPNs but add additional privacy protections.
And what is Tor software?
So Tor is a system called, stands for the Onion Router. And basically, it's a system intended to provide very strong privacy protection over the internet by decoupling who you are and who you visit by sending traffic around the internet before it comes out in kind of a random place. And so this is a web browser package and a network behind it run by volunteers that sends traffic kind of around the internet to obscure the correlation between the source and the destination. And that can help. But it's it may not be for everybody, but it's probably for more people than we're using it now.
Back to our comments. We've got an email from Janice who asks, where should I go to get a different ISP? And we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, but let's reference it again. Verizon and Comcast have divided Central New Jersey between them. I yearn for the days when antitrust laws were enforced. I'm just a commodity now. Brian, in your reporting, are you finding a sense of this among the people that you run into? Regarding privacy rules?
Certainly there's a lot of frustration among consumers about not being able to have an adequate amount of choice in their internet provider, and it's something that the previous FCC had really made a point of hammering on, this lack of choice among your internet provider, and it took a number of steps to try and ameliorate this. But in general, the reason why you only have one or two cable providers in your area is because of these things called cable franchises, which essentially, because it's expensive to build out an internet network, often local jurisdictions would, award the rights to build out an internet network to a single company or to two companies. And then, that company would be able to take advantage of all of their investments in that network. That's a slightly different approach from the way that they've done it in Europe, where regulations have forced a lot of companies to allow other internet providers to piggyback on their own networks. For example, so you might see a company selling an internet service, but in reality, they're actually using someone else's internet pipes, the actual hardware. Here in the United States, you don't have as much of that reselling going on. There is some of that going on in the cellular space where a lot of folks are increasingly shifting. You have a huge number of Americans moving increasingly to mobile internet and mobile broadband.
Sure.
In general, when it comes to fixed residential broadband, it's a much different story.
Let's get back to protections for private information. So, Matt, is it possible or practical to encrypt data manually?
Well, so encryption is a great technology for protecting content, but it's not so great for protecting metadata.
Yeah.
Essentially, we have much stronger technology. The technology is much more advanced for protecting individual data that you're sending as part of the content. But the metadata can't be encrypted because the internet itself needs to have that in clear form in order to be able to deliver your traffic.
And then back then to some of these services.
That's
like
right.
Like the VPN or Tor.
That's right. And so we have much more limited techniques for protecting metadata like VPNs and Tor. And,
Are they generally expensive?
Well, Tor is free, and that's free is a nice price.
Yeah.
VPNs are generally relatively inexpensive, although you do have to pay for them, which means that you have to have a financial relationship with your VPN provider, which means it inherently is likely to know who you are. So, there are some fundamental limits, but a VPN does help protect you from whatever your local ISP is doing.
So we have a text from a listener who asks, can metadata reveal the nature of two people's relationship?
And that is a terrific observation. In fact, I've called large-scale metadata collection just like phone records, who's calling who, as being kind of a national relationship database. And it reveals who we talk to, when we talk to them. And, the interesting thing about this is that it becomes – the more of it there is – the more powerful it becomes. It becomes kind of synergistic. When you collect large amounts of metadata, the individual pieces themselves become more revealing. And, we are discovering, on the computer science side and the data mining side, we're discovering increasingly powerful ways to discover what you would think would be very obscure nuggets of relationship information and behavioral information out of this sort of data as it scales up. Things you'd never be able to do by looking over it with your eyes. As soon as you start to apply some powerful algorithms, you start to see very subtle things about people's behavior and relationships that you'd never guess were being revealed from this sort of data.
It's frightening.
I don't want to sound too alarmist, but unfortunately, trend is that this is going to become a more serious issue over time.
Consumer beware.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Brian, just briefly, you also write about the $40 billion a year industry for data connections used by hospitals and universities and ATMs. What are these, and what does it seem the FCC is preparing to do here?
Sure. So essentially, this market is much like the market that consumers use to buy broadband at home, but instead this market serves large institutions like universities and hospitals. It also is what powers ATMs and credit card readers and all sorts of infrastructure that we rely on to conduct our financial transactions. And the FCC under the last administration had been proposing to institute a whole new set of rules that would have essentially sought to make this market a little bit more competitive, essentially by forcing more price competition in certain areas and whatnot. Now it appears as though with this new administration, there will be some kind of deregulation coming in the near term. It's not exactly clear what that will look like precisely, but it's something that the FCC has indicated it's interested in doing.
All right. And we only have a few minutes left, which is why I'm kind of rushing along here a little bit. We could go a couple hours on this topic. I do want to get back to some more information about private information and keeping it private. So HTTPS, if you see it in the URL bar, this indicates your connection to a particular site is encrypted. Is this information, quote, unquote, safe, Matt, then?
Well, HTTPS means that the content of the communication is protected by encryption. But the fact that you're communicating with that website is still revealed. So it only gets you so far, and that, again, is only about the content part, which we really which isn't what the ISPs are collecting.
Yep. And Brian, a browser is incognito or private modes. Do you believe this would prevent an ISP from monitoring internet activity? What are they about?
Well, for a service such as Google Chrome, for instance, Google is sucking up all of your browser history there, which is partly why it's offering that application in the first place. And so, to the extent that incognito mode prevents companies like Google from seeing that browser history, that can be helpful. Although, it is important to point out here that it doesn't necessarily prevent your internet provider from finding out where you're going, it doesn't necessarily prevent anyone from seeing the content of your communications when you reach a website, when you type in a search term in a search box or anything like that. So there are limits to incognito mode that it's not a cure-all, just as VPNs aren't necessarily a cure-all or Tor isn't necessarily a cure-all all by itself.
And Matt, what about secure chats? Chat apps.
Again, the fact that you're using a secure chat app is visible to the ISP. Yeah. And I think sort of the summary of my take on this is that metadata is something that technology can only go so far to protect. It's one of those things that technologists ultimately have to raise a white flag and say this is something that can really be best protected by regulation. So I think it's really important that people understand the privacy implications, the national security implications of this kind of data being collected and potentially misused, and lobby their members of Congress to protect it.
And Brian, just in about 10 seconds, a consumer can always go to their ISP and tell them you don't want them to sell personal data.
That's right. You can make that known and try and influence your provider to act as a more competent player in the marketplace.
All right, Brian Funk, thank you so much for joining us for Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Brian is technology reporter for The Washington Post, and Matt Blaze, a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Matt is assistant professor for computer and information science at the University of Pennsylvania. Don't forget, visit our Facebook page. Take a listen to our podcasts. You'll find them at whyy.org/radiotimes. Our engineer today has been Kevin Griffin. Our producer is Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain. Marty's back on Monday. As always, great to have you along for Radio Times.